Maybe the master didn't want the names of the suspected traitors getting out.
So?
The merchant asked.
Will you retrieve my lost years for me?
She bit her lip. Thoughts of spies instantly fading away. To journey into the depths of the Rune Mountains, to slay a Stygian spider. She could certainly see herself battling the eight-legged monstrosities. And witches. Though after Ansel's story, meeting a witch, especially one belonging to the Iron Teeth clans, was the last thing she ever wanted to do. For a heartbeat, she wished Sam were with her. Even if she told him about this encounter, he'd never believe her. But would anyone ever believe her? As if he could read her daydreams, he said,
I could make you rich beyond your wildest imaginings.
I'm already rich, and I'm unavailable until the end of the summer.
I won't be back from the southern continent for at least a year anyway, he countered.
She examined his face, the gleam in his eyes. Adventure and glory aside, anyone who'd sell 20 years of his life for a fortune couldn't be trusted. But the next time you're in Rifthold, she said slowly, seek out Erobin Hamo. The man's eyes widened. She wondered how he'd react if he knew who she was. He'll know where to find me. She turned from the table.
But what's your name?
She looked over her shoulder. He'll know where to find me. She repeated, and began walking back toward the stall with the pointed shoes.
Wait!
She paused in time to see him fumbling with the folds of his tunic.
Here.
He set down a plain wooden box on the table.
A reminder.
Selena flipped open the lid, and her breath caught. A folded bit of woven spider silk lay inside, no larger than 6 square inches. She could buy 10 horses with it. Not that she'd ever sell it. No. This was an heirloom to be passed down from generation to generation. If she ever had children, which seemed highly unlikely. A reminder of what? She shut the lid and tucked the small box into the inner pocket of her white tunic. The merchant smiled sadly.
That everything has a price.
A phantom pain flashed through her face.
I know, she said,
and left.
She wound up buying the shoes, though it was nearly impossible to pass over the lilac perfume, which smelled even more lovely the second time she approached the priestess's stall. When the city bells pealed 3 o'clock, she was sitting on the lip of the fountain, munching on what she hoped was mashed beans inside a warm bread pocket. Ansel was 15 minutes late, and didn't apologize. She merely grabbed Selena's arm and began leading her through the still-packed streets, her freckled face gleaming with sweat. What is it? Selena asked. What happened in your meeting? That's none of your business, Ansel said a bit sharply. Then she added, just follow me. They wound up sneaking inside the Lord of Xandria's palace walls, and Selena knew better than to ask questions as they crept across the grounds. But they didn't head to the towering central building. No. They approached the stables, where they slipped around the guards and entered the pungent shadows within. There had better be a good reason for this, Selena warned, as Ansel crept toward a pen. Oh, there is, she hissed back, and stopped at a gate, waving Selena forward. Selena frowned. It's a horse. But even as the words left her mouth, she knew it wasn't. It's an Asterian horse, Ansel breathed, her red-brown eyes growing huge. The horse was black as pitch, with dark eyes that bored into Selena's own. She'd heard of Asterian horses, of course. The most ancient breed of horse in Aurelia. Legend claimed that the Fae had made them from the four winds, spirit from the north, strength from the south, speed from the east, and wisdom from the west. All rolled into the slender-snouted, high-tailed, lovely creature that stood before her. Have you ever seen anything so beautiful? Ansel whispered. Her name is Hisley. Mares, Selena remembered, were more prized, as Asterian pedigrees were traced through the female line. And that one? Ansel said, pointing to the next stall. Is named Cassida. It means drinker of the wind in the desert dialect. Cassita's name was fitting. The slender mare was a dapple gray, with a seafoam white mane and thundercloud coat. She huffed and stomped her forelegs, staring at Selena with eyes that seemed older than the earth itself. Selena suddenly understood why the Asterian horses were worth their weight in gold.
Lord Beric got them today, bought them from a merchant on his way to Benjali. Ansel slipped into Hisley's pen.
She cooed and murmured, stroking the horse's muzzle.
He's planning on testing them out in half an hour.
That explained why they were already saddled.
And?
Selena whispered, holding out a hand for Cassita to smell. The mare's nostrils flared, her velvety nose tickling Selena's fingertips.
And then he's either gonna give them away as a bribe,
or lose interest and let them languish here for the rest of their lives. Lord Beric tends to tire of his playthings rather quickly.
What a waste.
Indeed it is, Ansel muttered from inside the stall. Selena lowered her fingers from Cassita's muzzle and peered into Hisley's pen. Ansel was running a hand down Hisley's black flank, her face still full of wonder. Then she turned.
Are you a strong rider?
Of course,
Selena said slowly.
Good.
Selena bit down on her cry of alarm as Ansel unlocked the stall door and guided Hisley out of her pen. In a smooth, quick motion, the girl was atop the horse, clutching the reins in one hand.
Because you're gonna have to ride like hell.
And with that, Ansel sent Hisley into a gallop, heading straight for the stable doors. Selena didn't have time to gape or really even to process what she was about to do as she unlocked Cassita's pen, yanked her out, and heaved herself into the saddle. With a muffled curse, she dug her heels into the mare's sides and took off. Chapter 6. The guards didn't know what was happening until the horses had already rushed past them in a blur of black and gray, and they were through the main palace gate before the guards' cries finished echoing. Ansel's red hair shone like a beacon as she broke for the side exit from the city, people leaping aside to let them pass. Selena looked back through the crowded streets only once, and that was enough to see the three mounted guards charging after them, shouting. But the girls were already through the city gate and into the sea of red dunes that spread beyond. Ansel riding as if the denizens of hell were behind her. Selena could only race after her, doing her best to keep in the saddle. Cassita moved like thunder and turned with the swiftness of lightning. The mare was so fast that Selena's eyes watered in the wind. The three guards, astride ordinary horses, were still far off, but not nearly far enough for comfort. In the vastness of the red desert, Selena had no choice but to follow Ansel. Selena clung to Cassita's mane as they took dune after dune, up and down, down and up, until there was only the red sand and the cloudless sky, and the rumble of hooves, hooves, hooves rolling through the world. Ansel slowed enough for Selena to catch up, and they galloped along the broad, flat top of a dune.
Are you out of your damned mind? Selena shouted. I don't want to walk home. We're taking a shortcut,
Ansel shouted back. Behind them, the three guards still charged onward. Selena debated slamming Cassita into Hisley to send Ansel tumbling onto the dunes, leaving her for the guards to take care of. But the girl pointed over Hisley's dark head.
Live a little, Sardothian!
And just like that, the dunes parted to reveal the turquoise expanse of the Gulf of Oro. The cool sea breeze kissed her face, and Selena leaned into it, almost moaning with pleasure. Ansel let out a whoop, careening down the final dune and heading straight toward the beach and the breaking waves. Despite herself, Selena smiled and held on tighter. Cassita hit the hard-packed red sand and gained speed, faster and faster. Selena had a sudden moment of clarity then, as her hair ripped from her braid and the wind tore at her clothes. Of all the girls in all the world, here she was on a spit of beach in the red desert, astride an Asterian horse, racing faster than the wind. Most would never experience this. She would never experience anything like this again. And for that one heartbeat, when there was nothing more to it than that, she tasted bliss so complete that she tipped her head back to the sky and laughed. The guards reached the beach, their fierce cries nearly swallowed up by the booming surf. Ansel cut away, surging toward the dunes and the giant wall of rock that arose nearby. The Desert Cleaver, if Selena knew her geography correctly, which she did, as she'd studied maps of the deserted land for weeks now. A giant wall that arose from the earth and stretched from the eastern coast all the way to the black dunes of the south, split clean down the middle by an enormous fissure. They'd come around it on the waves from the fortress, which was the other side of the cleaver, and that was what had made their journey so insufferably long. But today... "Faster, Casita," she whispered in the horse's ear. As if the mare understood her, she took off, and soon Selena was again beside Ansel, cutting up dune after dune as they headed straight for the red wall of rock. "What are you doing?" she called to Ansel. Ansel gave her a fiendish grin. "We're going through it! What good is an Asterian horse if it can't jump?" Selena's stomach dropped. "You can't be serious!" Ansel glanced over her shoulder, her red hair streaming past her face. "They'll chase us to the doors of the fortress if we go the long way!" But the guards couldn't make the jump, not with ordinary horses. A narrow opening in the wall of red rock appeared, twisting away from sight. Ansel headed straight toward it. How dare she make such a reckless, stupid decision without consulting Selena first? "You planned this the whole time," Selena snapped. Though the guards still remained a good distance away, they were close enough for Selena to see the weapons, including longbows, strapped to them. Ansel didn't reply. She just sent Hisley flying forward. Selena had to choose between the unforgiving walls of the cleaver and the three guards behind them. She could take the guards in a few seconds, if she slowed enough to draw her daggers. But they were mounted, and aiming might be impossible. Which meant she'd have to get close enough to kill them, as long as they didn't start firing at her first. They probably wouldn't shoot at Casita, not when she was worth more than all of their lives put together. But Selena couldn't bring herself to risk the magnificent beast. And if she killed the guards, that still left her alone in the desert, since Ansel surely wouldn't stop until she was on the other side of the cleaver. Since she had no desire to die of thirst. Cursing colorfully, Selena plunged after Ansel into the passage through the canyon. The passage was so narrow that Selena's legs nearly grazed the rain-smoothed orange walls. The beating hooves echoed like firecrackers, the sound only worsening as the three guards entered the canyon. It would have been nice, she realized, to have Sam with her. He might be a pain in her ass, but he'd proven himself to be more than handy in a fight. Extraordinarily skilled, if she felt like admitting it. Ansel wove and turned with the passage, fast as a stream down a mountainside, and it was all Selena could do to hold on to Casita as they followed. A twang snapped through the canyon, and Selena ducked low to Casita's surging head, just as an arrow ricocheted off the rock a few feet away. So much for not firing at the horses. Another sharp turn set her in the clear, but the relief was short-lived as she beheld the long, straight passage and the ravine beyond it. Selena's breath lodged in her throat. The jump had to be 30 feet at least, and she didn't want to know how long a fall it was if she missed. Ansel barreled ahead, then her body tensed, and Hisley leapt from the cliff edge. The sunlight caught in Ansel's hair as they flew over the ravine, and she loosed a joyous cry that set the whole canyon humming. A moment later, she landed on the other side, with only inches to spare. There wasn't enough room for Selena to stop. Even if she tried, they wouldn't have enough space to slow down, and they'd go right over the edge. So she began praying to anyone, anything. Casita gave a sudden burst of speed, as if she, too, understood that only the gods would see them safely over. And then they were at the lip of the ravine, which went down, down, down to a jade river hundreds of feet below. And Cassita was soaring, only air beneath them, nothing to keep her from the death that now wrapped around her completely. Selena could only hold on and wait to fall, to die, to scream as she met her horrible end. But then there was rock under them, solid rock. She gripped Cassita tighter as they landed in the narrow passage on the other side, the impact exploding through her bones, and kept galloping. Back across the ravine, the guards had pulled to a halt and cursed at them in a language she was grateful she didn't understand. Ansel let out another whoop when they came out the other end of the cleaver, and she turned to find Selena still riding close behind her. They rode across the dunes, heading west, the setting sun turning the entire world blood red. When the horses were too winded to keep running, Ansel finally stopped atop a dune, Selena pulling up beside her. Ansel looked at Selena, wildness still rampant in her eyes. Wasn't that wonderful? Breathing hard, Selena didn't say anything as she punched Ansel so hard in the face that the girl went flying off her horse and tumbled onto the sand. Ansel just clutched her jaw and laughed. Though they could have made it back before midnight, and though Selena pushed her to continue riding, Ansel insisted on stopping for the night. So when their campfire was nothing but embers and the horses were dozing behind them, Ansel and Selena lay on their backs on the side of a dune and stared up at the stars. Her hands tucked behind her head, Selena took a long, deep breath, savoring the balmy night breeze, the exhaustion ebbing from her limbs. She rarely got to see stars so bright, not with the lights of Rifthold. The wind moved across the dunes, and the sand sighed. "You know," Ansel said quietly, "I never learned the constellations, though I think ours are different from yours. The names, I mean." It took Selena a moment to realize that by ours, she didn't mean the silent assassins. She meant her people in the western wastes. Selena pointed to a cluster of stars to their left. "That's the dragon." She traced the shape. "See the head, legs, and tail?"
"No,"
Ansel chuckled. Selena nudged her with an elbow and pointed to another grouping of stars. "That's the swan. The lines on either side are the wings, and the arc is its neck."
"What about that one?" Ansel said.
"That's the stag," Selena breathed. "The Lord of the North."
"Why does he get a fancy title? What about the swan and the dragon?"
Selena snorted, but the smile faded when she stared at the familiar constellation, because the stag remains constant. No matter the season, he's always there.
"Why?"
Selena took a long breath. "So the people of Terrasen will always know how to find their way home. So they can look up at the sky, no matter where they are, and know Terrasen is forever with them."
"Do you ever want to return to Terrasen?"
Selena turned her head to look at Ansel. She hadn't told her she was from Terrasen.
Ansel said, "You talk about Terrasen the way my father used to talk about our land."
Selena was about to reply when she caught the word, "used to." Ansel's attention remained on the stars.
"I lied to the master when I came here,"
she whispered, as if afraid someone else would hear them in the emptiness of the desert. Selena looked back to the sky.
"My father never sent me to train. And there is no Briarcliff or Briarcliff Hall."
"There hasn't been for 5 years. A dozen questions sprung up, but Selena kept her mouth shut, letting Ansel speak.
"I was 12, Ansel said,
"when Lord Locke took several territories around Briarcliff, and then demanded we yield to him as well, that we bow to him as High King of the Wastes. My father refused. He said there was one tyrant already conquering everything east of the mountains. He didn't want one in the west, too." Selena's blood went cold as she braced herself for what she was certain was coming.
2 weeks later, Lord Locke marched into our land with his men, seizing our villages, our livelihood, our people.
and when he got to Briarcliff Hall. Ansel drew a shuddering breath. When he arrived at Briarcliff Hall, I was in the kitchen. I saw them from the window and hid in a cupboard as Locke walked in. My sister and father were upstairs, and Locke stayed in the kitchen as his men brought them down, and I didn't dare make a sound, as Lord Locke made my father watch as he... She stumbled, but forced it out, spitting it as if it were poison. My father begged on his hands and knees, but Locke still made my father watch as he slit my sister's throat, then his. And I just hid there, even as they killed our servants, too. I hid there and did nothing. And when they were gone, I took my father's sword from his corpse and ran. I ran and ran until I couldn't run anymore, at the foothills of the White Fang Mountains. And that's when I collapsed at the campfire of a witch, one of the Iron Teeth. I didn't care if she killed me, but she told me that it was not my fate to die there, that I should journey south to the Silent Assassins in the Red Desert, and there I would find my fate. She fed me and bound my bleeding feet and gave me gold, gold that I later used to commission my armor, then sent me on my way. Ansel wiped at her eyes. So I've been here ever since, training for the day when I'm strong enough and fast enough to return to Briarcliff and take back what is mine. Someday, I'll march into High King Locke's hall and repay him for what he did to my family. With my father's sword. Her hand grazed the wolf head hilt. This sword will end his life, because this sword is all I have left of them. Selena hadn't realized she was crying until she tried to take a deep breath. Saying that she was sorry didn't feel adequate. She knew what this sort of loss was like, and words didn't do anything at all. Ansel slowly turned to look at her, her eyes lined with silver. She traced Selena's cheekbone, where the bruises had once been. Where do men find it in themselves to do such monstrous things? How do they find it acceptable? We'll make them pay for it in the end. Selena grasped Ansel's hand. The girl squeezed back hard. We'll see to it that they pay. Yes. Ansel shifted her gaze back to the stars. Yes, we will.
Chapter 7. Selena and Ansel knew their little escapade with the Asterion horses would have consequences. Selena had at least expected to have enough time to tell a decent lie about how they acquired the horses. But when they returned to the fortress and found Mikhail waiting, along with three other assassins, she knew that word of their stunt had somehow already reached the master. She kept her mouth shut as she and Ansel knelt at the foot of the master's dais, heads bowed, eyes on the floor. She certainly wouldn't convince him to train her now. His receiving chamber was empty today, and each of his steps scraped softly against the floor. She knew he could be silent if he wished. He wanted them to feel the dread of his approach. And Selena felt it. She felt each footstep, the phantom bruises on her face throbbing with the memory of Arobin's fists. And suddenly, as the memory of that day echoed through her, she remembered the words Sam kept screaming at Arobin as the King of Assassins beat her, the words that she somehow had forgotten in the fog of pain. I'll kill you! Sam had said it like he meant it. He'd bellowed it. Again and again and again. The clear, unexpected memory was almost jarring enough for her to forget where she was. But then the snow-white robes of the master came into view. Her mouth went dry.
We only wanted to have some fun, Ansel said quietly. We can return the horses.
Selena, head still lowered, glanced toward Ansel. She was staring up at the master as he towered over them.
I'm sorry, Selena murmured,
wishing she could convey it with her hands, too. Though silence might have been preferable, she needed him to hear her apology. The master just stood there. Ansel was the first to break under his stare. She sighed.
I know it was foolish, but there's nothing to worry about. I can handle Lord Beric. I've been handling him for ages. There was enough bitterness in her words that Selena's brows rose slightly. Perhaps his refusal to train her wasn't easy for Ansel to bear. She was never outright competitive about getting the master's attention, but after so many years of living here, being stuck as the mediator between the master and Beric didn't exactly seem like the sort of glory Ansel was interested in. Selena certainly wouldn't have enjoyed it. The master's clothes whispered as they moved, and Selena flinched when she felt his calloused fingers hook under her chin. He lifted her head, so she was forced to look at him, his face lined with disapproval. She remained perfectly still, bracing herself for the strike, already praying he wouldn't damage her too significantly. But then the master's sea-green eyes narrowed ever so slightly, and he gave her a sad smile as he released her. Her face burned. He hadn't been about to hit her. He'd wanted her to look at him, to tell her side of the story. But even if he wasn't going to strike her, he might still punish them. And if he kicked out Ansel for what they'd done? Ansel needed to be here, to learn all that these assassins could teach her, because Ansel wanted to do something with her life. Ansel had a purpose. And Selena. "It was my idea," Selena blurted, her words too loud in the empty chamber. "I didn't feel like walking back here, and I thought it would be useful to have horses. And when I saw the Asterian mares, I thought we might as well travel in style." She gave him a shaky half-grin, and the master's brows rose as he looked between them. For a long, long moment, he just watched them. Whatever he saw on Ansel's face suddenly made him nod. Ansel quickly bowed her head. "Before you decide on a punishment," she turned to Selena, then looked back at the master. "Since we like horses so much, maybe we could be on stable duty? For the morning shift, until Selena leaves." Selena almost choked, but she schooled her features into neutrality. A faint glimmer of amusement shone in his eyes, and he considered Ansel's words for a moment. Then he nodded again. Ansel loosened a breath. "Thank you for your lenience," she said. The master glanced toward the doors behind them. They were dismissed. Ansel got to her feet, and Selena followed suit. But as Selena turned, the master grabbed her arm. Ansel paused to watch as the master made a few motions with his hand. When he finished, Ansel's brows rose. He repeated the motions again, slower, pointing to Selena repeatedly. When it seemed she was certain she understood him, Ansel turned to Selena. "You're to report to him at sunset tomorrow, for your first lesson." Selena bit back her sigh of relief and gave the master a genuine grin. He returned a hint of a smile. She bowed deeply and couldn't stop smiling as she and Ansel left the hall and headed to the stables. She had 3.5 weeks left. That would be more than enough time to get that letter. Whatever he had seen in her face, whatever she had said, somehow, she'd proven herself to him at last. It turned out that they weren't just responsible for shoveling horse dung. Oh, no. They were responsible for cleaning the pens of all the four-legged livestock in the fortress, a task that took them from breakfast until noon. At least they did it in the morning, before the afternoon heat really made the smell atrocious. Another benefit was that they didn't have to go running, though after 4 hours of shoveling animal droppings, Selena would have begged to take the 6-mile run instead. Anxious as she was to be out of the stables, she couldn't contain her growing trepidation as the sun arced across the sky, heading toward sunset. She didn't know what to expect. Even Ansel had no idea what the master might have in mind. They spent the afternoon sparring as usual, with each other, and with whatever assassins wandered into the shade of the open-air training courtyard. And when the sun finally hovered near the horizon, Ansel gave Selena a squeeze on the shoulder and sent her to the master's hall. But the master wasn't in his receiving hall, and when she ran into Ilias, he just gave her his usual smile and pointed toward the roof. After taking a few staircases, and then climbing a wooden ladder and squeezing through a hatch in the ceiling, she found herself in the open air,
high atop the fortress. The master stood by the parapet, gazing across the desert. She cleared her throat, but he remained with his back to her. The roof couldn't have been more than 20 square feet, and the only thing on it was a covered reed basket placed in the center. Torches burned, illuminating the rooftop. Selena cleared her throat again, and the master finally turned. She bowed, which, strangely, was something she felt he actually deserved, rather than something she ought to do. He gave her a nod and pointed to the reed basket, beckoning her to open the lid. Doing her best not to look skeptical, hoping there was a beautiful new weapon inside, she approached. She stopped when she heard the hissing. Unpleasant, don't come closer hissing from inside the basket. She turned to the master, who hopped onto one of the merlins, his bare feet dangling in the gap between one block of stone and the next, and beckoned her again. Palms sweating, Selena took a deep breath and snatched back the lid. A black asp curled into itself, head drawn back low as it hissed. Selena leapt away a yard, making for the parapet wall, but the master let out a low click of his tongue. His hands moved, flowing and winding through the air like a river. Like a snake. Observe it, he seemed to tell her. Move with it. She looked back at the basket in time to see the slender black head of the asp slide over the rim, then down to the tiled roof. Her heart thundered in her chest. It was poisonous, wasn't it? It had to be. It looked poisonous. The snake slithered across the roof, and Selena inched back from it, not daring to look away for even a heartbeat. She reached for a dagger, but the master again clicked his tongue. A glance in his direction was enough for her to understand the meaning of the sound. Don't kill it. Absorb. The snake moved effortlessly, lazily, and tasted the evening air with its black tongue. With a deep, steadying breath, Selena observed. She spent every night that week on the roof with the asp, watching it, copying its movements, internalizing its rhythm and sounds until she could move like it moved, until they could face each other and she could anticipate how it would lunge, until she could strike like the asp, swift and unflinching. After that, she spent 3 days dangling from the rafters of the fortress stables with the bats. It took her longer to figure out their strengths, how they became so silent that no one noticed they were there, how they could drown out the external noise and focus only on the sound of their prey. And after that, it was 2 nights spent with jackrabbits on the dunes, learning their stillness, absorbing how they used their speed and dexterity to evade talons and claws, how they slept above ground to better hear their enemies approaching. Night after night, the master watched from nearby, never saying a word, never doing anything except occasionally pointing out how an animal moved. As the remaining weeks passed, she saw Ansel only during meals and for the few hours they spent each morning shoveling manure. And after a long night spent sprinting or hanging upside down or running sideways to see why crabs bothered moving like that, Selena was usually in no mood to talk. But Ansel was merry, almost gleeful, more and more with every passing day. She never said why exactly, but Selena found it rather infectious. And every day, Selena went to sleep after lunch and dozed until the sun went down, her dreams full of snakes and rabbits and chirping desert beetles. Sometimes she spotted Mikhail training the acolytes, or found Elias meditating in an empty training room. But she rarely got the chance to spend time with them. They had no more attacks from Lord Beric, either. Whatever Ansel had said during that meeting with him in Xandria, whatever the master's letter had contained, it seemed to have worked, even after the theft of his horses. There were quiet moments, also, when she wasn't training or toiling with Ansel. Moments when her thoughts drifted back to Sam, to what he'd said. He'd threatened to kill Aerobin, for hurting her. She tried to work through it, tried to figure out what had changed in Skull's Bay,
to make Sam dare say such a thing to the King of the Assassins. But whenever she caught herself thinking about it too much, she shoved those thoughts into the back of her mind. Chapter 8.
"You mean to tell me you do this every day?" Ansel said, her brows high on her forehead as Selena brushed rouge onto the girl's cheeks.
"Sometimes twice a day," Selena said, and Ansel opened an eye. They were sitting on Selena's bed, a scattering of cosmetics between them, a small fraction of Selena's enormous collection back in Rifthold.
"Besides being useful for my work, it's fun."
"Fun?"
Ansel opened her other eye. "Smearing all this gunk on your face is fun." Selena set down her pot of rouge.
"If you don't shut up, I'll draw a mustache on you."
Ansel's lips twitched, but she closed her eyes again as Selena raised the little container of bronze powder and dusted some on her eyelids.
"Well, it is my birthday and Midsummer Eve," Ansel said,
her eyelashes fluttering beneath the tickle of Selena's delicate brush.
"We so rarely get to have fun. I suppose I should look nice."
Ansel always looked nice. Better than nice, actually. But Selena didn't need to tell her that.
"At a minimum, at least you don't smell like horse droppings."
Ansel let out a breathy chuckle, the air warm on Selena's hands as they hovered near her face. She kept quiet while Selena finished with the powder, then held still as she lined her eyes with coal and darkened her lashes.
"All right," Selena said,
sitting back so she could see Ansel's face.
"Open."
Ansel opened her eyes, and Selena frowned.
"What?"
Ansel said. Selena shook her head.
"You're going to have to wash it all off."
"Why?"
"Because you look better than I do."
Ansel pinched Selena's arm. Selena pinched her back, laughter on her lips. But then, the single remaining week that Selena had left loomed before her, brief and unforgiving, and her chest tightened at the thought of leaving. She hadn't even dared to ask the master for her letter yet. But more than that, well, she'd never had a female friend, never really had any friends. And somehow, the thought of returning to Rifthold without Ansel was a tad unbearable. The Midsummer Eve festival was nothing like Selena had ever experienced. She'd expected music and drinking and laughter. But instead, the assassins gathered in the largest of the fortress courtyards, and all of them, including Ansel, were totally silent. The moon provided the only light, silhouetting the date trees swaying along the courtyard walls. But the strangest part was the dancing. Even though there was no music, most of the people danced, some of the dances foreign and strange, some of them familiar. Everyone was smiling. But aside from the rustle of clothing and the scrape of merry feet against the stones, there was no sound. But there was wine. And she and Ansel found a table in a corner of the courtyard and fully indulged themselves. Though she loved, loved, loved parties, Selena would rather have spent the night training with the master. With only 1 week left, she wanted to spend every waking moment working with him. But he'd insisted she go to the party, if only because he wanted to go to the party. The old man danced to a rhythm Selena could not hear or make out, and looked more like someone's benevolent, clumsy grandfather than the master of some of the world's greatest assassins. She couldn't help but think of Aerobin, who was all calculated grace and restrained aggression. Aerobin, who danced with a select few, and whose smile was razor-sharp. Mikhail had dragged Ansel to the dancing, and she was grinning as she twirled and bobbed and bounced from partner to partner, all of the assassins now keeping the same silent beat. Ansel had experienced such horror, and yet she was still so carefree, so keenly alive. Mikhail caught her in his arms and dipped her, low enough for Ansel's eyes to widen. Mikhail truly liked Ansel, that much was obvious. He always found excuses to touch her, always smiled at her, always looked at her as if she were the only person in the room.
Selena sloshed the wine around in her glass. If she were being honest, sometimes she thought Sam looked at her that way. But then he'd go and say something absurd or try to undermine her, and she'd chide herself for even thinking that about him. Her stomach tightened. What had Arobin done to him that night? She should have inquired after him. But in the days afterward, she'd been so busy, so wrapped in her rage, she hadn't dared look for him, actually. Because if Arobin had hurt Sam the way he'd hurt her, if he'd hurt Sam worse than that. Selena drained the rest of her wine. During the 2 days after she'd awoken from her beating, she'd used a good chunk of her savings to purchase her own apartment, away and well hidden from the assassin's keep. She hadn't told anyone, partially because she was worried she might change her mind while she was away. But with each day here, with each lesson with the master, she was more and more resolved to tell Arobin she was moving out. She was actually eager to see the look on his face. She still owed him money, of course. He'd seen to it that her debts would keep her with him for a while. But there was no rule that said she had to live with him. And if he ever laid a hand on her again, if Arobin ever laid a hand on her or Sam again, she'd see to it that he lost that hand. Actually, she'd see to it that he lost everything up to the elbow. Someone touched her shoulder, and Selena looked up from her empty wine goblet to find Ilya standing behind her. She hadn't seen much of him in the past few days, aside from at dinner, where he still glanced at her and gave her those lovely smiles. He offered his hand. Selena's face instantly warmed, and she shook her head, trying her best to convey a sense of not knowing these dances. Ilya shrugged, his eyes bright. His hand remained extended. She bit her lip and glanced pointedly at his feet. Ilya shrugged again, this time as if to suggest that his toes weren't all that valuable anyway. Selena glanced at Mikhail and Ansel, spinning wildly to a beat only the two of them could hear. Ilya raised his brows. "Live a little, Sardothian?" Ansel had said that the day they stole the horses. Why not live a little tonight, too? Selena gave him a dramatic shrug and took his hand, tossing a wry smile his way. "I suppose I could spare a dance or two," she wanted to say. Even though there was no music, Ilias led her through the dances with ease, each of his movements sure and steady. It was hard to look away, not just from his face, but also from the contentment that radiated from him. And he looked back at her so intently that she had to wonder if he'd been watching her all these weeks, not only to protect his father. They danced until well after midnight. Wild dances that weren't at all like the waltzes she'd learned in Rifthold. Even when she switched partners, Ilias was always there, waiting for the next dance. It was almost as intoxicating as the oddity of dancing to no music, to hearing a collective silent rhythm, to letting the wind and the sighing sand outside the fortress provide the beat and the melody. It was lovely and strange. And as the hours passed, she often wondered if she'd strayed into some dream. When the moon was setting, Selena found herself leaving the dance floor, doing her best to convey how exhausted she was. It wasn't a lie. Her feet hurt, and she hadn't a proper night's rest in weeks and weeks. Ilias tried pulling her back onto the floor for one last dance, but she nimbly slipped out of his grasp, grinning as she shook her head. Ansel and Mikhail were still dancing, holding each other closer than any other pair on the dance floor. Not wanting to interrupt her friend, Selena left the hall, Ilias in tow. She couldn't deny that her racing heartbeat wasn't just from the dancing as they walked down the empty hall. Ilias strode beside her, silent as ever, and she swallowed tightly. What would he say, that is, if he could speak, if he knew that Otterlin's assassin had never been kissed? She'd killed men, freed slaves, stolen horses, but she'd never kissed anyone. It was ridiculous somehow. Something that she should have gotten out of the way at some point, but she'd never found the right person. All too quickly, they were standing outside the door to her room. Selena didn't touch the door handle and tried to calm her breathing as she turned to face Ilias. He was smiling. Maybe he didn't mean to kiss her. His room was, after all, just a few doors down. "Well," she said. After so many hours of silence, the word was jarringly loud. Her face burned. He stepped closer, and she tried not to flinch as he slipped a hand around her waist. It would be so simple to kiss him, she realized. His other hand slid against her neck, his thumb caressing her jaw as he gently tilted her head back. Her blood pounded through every inch of her. Her lips parted, but as Ilias inclined his head, she went rigid and stepped back. He immediately withdrew, his brows crossed with concern. She wanted to seep into the stones and disappear. "I'm sorry," she said thickly, trying not to look too mortified. I can't. I mean, I'm leaving in a week, and you live here, and I'm in Rifthold, so..." She was babbling. She should stop. Actually, she should just stop talking forever. But if he sensed her mortification, he didn't show it. Instead, he bowed his head and squeezed her shoulder. Then he gave her one of those shrugs, which she interpreted to mean, "If only we didn't live thousands of miles apart. But can you blame me for trying?" With that, he strode the few feet to his room. He gave her a friendly wave before disappearing inside. Alone in the hallway, Selena watched the shadows cast by the torches. It hadn't been the mere impossibility of a relationship with Ilias that had made her pull away. No, it was the memory of Sam's face that had stopped her from kissing him. Ansel didn't come back to their room that night, and when she stumbled into the stables the following morning, still wearing her clothes from the party, Selena could assume she'd either spent the whole night dancing or with Mikhail. From the flush on Ansel's freckled cheeks, Selena thought it might be both. Ansel took one look at the grin on Selena's face and glowered. "Don't you even start." Selena shoveled a heap of manure into the nearby wagon. Later, she'd cart it to the gardens, where it would be used for fertilizer. "What?" Selena said, grinning even wider. "I wasn't gonna say anything." Ansel snatched her shovel from where it leaned against the wooden wall, several pens down from where Casita and Hisley now had their new homes. "Good. I got enough of it from the others while I was walking here." Selena leaned against her shovel in the open gate. "I'm sure Mikhail will get his fair share of teasing, too." Ansel straightened, her eyes surprisingly dark. "No, he won't. They'll congratulate him, just like they always do, for a conquest well made." She let out a long sigh from her nose. "But me? I'll get teased until I snap at them. It's always the same." They continued their work in silence. After a moment, Selena spoke. "Even though they tease you, you still want to be with Mikhail?" Ansel shrugged again, flinging dung into the pile she'd gathered into the wagon. "He's an amazing warrior. He's taught me far more than I would have learned without him. So they can tease me all they want. But at the end of the day, he's still the one giving me extra attention when we train." That didn't sit well with Selena, but she opted to keep her mouth shut. "Besides," Ansel said, glancing sidelong at Selena, "not all of us can so easily convince the master to train us." Selena's stomach twisted a little. Was Ansel jealous of that? I'm not entirely sure why he changed his mind. "Oh?" Ansel said, sharper than Selena had ever heard her. It scared her, surprisingly. "The noble, clever, beautiful assassin from the north, the great Selena Sardothian, has no idea why he'd want to train her? No idea that he might want to leave his mark on you, too, to have a hand in shaping your glorious fate?" Selena's throat tightened, and she cursed herself for feeling so hurt by the words. She didn't think the master felt that way at all, but she still hissed, "Yes, my glorious fate, shoveling dung in a barn, a worthy task for me." "But certainly a worthy task for a girl from the Flatlands." "I didn't say that," Selena said through her teeth. "Don't put words in my mouth."
Why not? I know you think it, and you know I'm telling the truth. I'm not good enough for the master to train me. I began seeing Mikhail to get extra attention during lessons, and I certainly don't have a notorious name to flaunt around.
Fine, Selena said. Yes, most of the people in the kingdoms know my name, know to fear me.
Her temper rose with dizzying speed.
But you? You want to know the truth about you, Ansel? The truth is, even if you go home and get what you want, no one will give a damn if you take back your speck of territory. No one will even hear about it, because no one except for you will even care.
She regretted the words the instant they left her mouth. Ansel's face went white with anger, and her lips trembled as she pressed them together. Ansel threw down her shovel. For a moment, Selena thought that she'd attack, and even went as far as slightly bending her knees in anticipation of a fight. But Ansel stalked past her and said, "You're just a spoiled, selfish bitch." With that, she left Selena to finish their morning chores.
Chapter 9. Selena couldn't focus on her lesson with the master that night. All day, Ansel's words had been ringing in her ears. She hadn't seen her friend for hours, and dreaded the moment when she'd have to return to her room and face her again. Though Selena hated to admit it, Ansel's parting claim had felt true. She was spoiled, and selfish. The master snapped his fingers, and Selena, who was yet again studying an asp, looked up. Though she'd been mirroring the snake's movements, she hadn't noticed it was slowly creeping toward her. She leapt back a few feet, crouching close to the roof's wall, but stopped when she felt the master's hand on her shoulder. He motioned to leave the snake be and sit beside him on the merlins that ran around the roof. Grateful for a break, she hopped up, trying not to glance down at the ground far, far below. Though she was well acquainted with heights and had no problems with balance, sitting on an edge never really felt natural. The master raised his eyebrows. "Talk," he seemed to say. She tucked her left foot under her right thigh, making sure to keep an eye on the asp, which slithered into the shadows of the roof. But telling him about her fight with Ansel felt so childish. As if the master of the silent assassins would want to hear about a petty squabble. Cicadas buzzed in the trees of the keep, and somewhere in the gardens, a nightingale sang her lament. Talk. Talk about what? She didn't have anything to say, so they sat on the parapet in silence for a while, until even the cicadas went to sleep, and the moon slipped away behind them, and the sky began to brighten. Talk. Talk about what had been haunting her these months, haunting every thought, every dream, every breath. Talk. I'm scared to go home, she said at last, staring out at the dunes beyond the walls. The pre-dawn light was bright enough for her to see the master's brows rise. Why? Because everything will be different. Everything is already different. I think everything changed when Arobin punished me, but some part of me still thinks that the world will go back to the way it was before that night, before I went to Skull's Bay. The master's eyes shone like emeralds. Compassionate. Sorrowful. I'm not sure I want it to go back to the way it was before, she admitted. And I think that's what scares me the most. The master smiled at her reassuringly, then rolled his neck and stretched his arms over his head before standing atop the merlin. Selena tensed, unsure if she should follow. But the master didn't look at her as he began a series of movements, graceful and winding, as elegant as a dance and deadly as the asp that lurked on the roof. The asp. Watching the master, she could see each of the qualities she had copied for the past few weeks. The contained power and swiftness, the cunning and the smooth restraint. He went through the motions again, and it took only a glance in her direction to get her to her feet atop the parapet wall. Mindful of her balance, she slowly copied him, her muscles singing with the rightness of the movements. She grinned as night after night of careful observation and mimicry clicked into place. Again and again, the sweep and curve of her arm, the twisting of her torso, even the rhythm of her breathing. Again and again, until she became the asp, until the sun broke over the horizon, bathing them in red light. Again and again, until there was nothing left but the master and her, as they greeted the new day. An hour after sunup, Selena crept into her room, bracing herself for another fight, but found Ansel already gone to the stables. Since Ansel had abandoned her to do the chores by herself yesterday, Selena decided to return the favor. She sighed with contentment as she collapsed atop her bed. She was later awoken by someone shaking her shoulder, someone who smelled like manure.
It had better be afternoon, Selena said,
rolling onto her stomach and burying her face in her pillow. Ansel chuckled.
Oh, it's almost dinner, and the stables and pens are in good order, no thanks to you.
You left me to do it all yesterday, Selena mumbled.
Yes, well, I'm sorry.
Selena peeled her face from the pillow to look at Ansel, who stood over the bed. Ansel twisted her hands. She was wearing her armor again. At the sight of it, Selena winced as she recalled what she'd said about her friend's homeland. Ansel tucked her red hair behind her ears.
I shouldn't have said those things about you. I don't think you're spoiled or selfish.
Oh, don't worry, I am, very much so.
Selena sat up. Ansel gave her a weak smile. But, she went on, I'm sorry for what I said, too. I didn't mean it. Ansel nodded, glancing toward the shut door, as if she expected someone to be there.
I have lots of friends here, but you're the first true friend I've had. I'll be sorry to see you go.
I still have 5 days, Selena said. Given how popular Ansel was, it was surprising, and somewhat relieving, to hear that she'd also felt slightly alone.
Ansel flicked her eyes to the door again.
What was she nervous about? Try to remember me fondly, will you?
I'll try, but it might be hard.
Ansel let out a quiet laugh and took 2 goblets from the table beneath the window.
I brought us some wine.
She handed one to Selena. Ansel lifted her copper goblet.
To make an amends and fond memories.
To being the most fearsome and imposing girls the world has ever seen. Selena raised her goblet high before she drank. And as she swallowed a large mouthful of wine, she had 2 thoughts. The first was that Ansel's eyes were now filled with unmasked sorrow. And the second, which explained the first, was that the wine tasted strange. But Selena didn't have time to consider what poison it was before she heard her own goblet clatter to the floor, and the world spun and went black. Chapter 10. Someone was hammering against an anvil somewhere, very, very close to her head. So close that she felt each beat in her body, the sound shattering through her mind, stirring her from sleep. With a jolt, Selena sat up. There was no hammer and no anvil, just a pounding headache. And there was no assassin's fortress, only endless miles of red dunes, and Casita standing watch over her. Well, at least she wasn't dead. Cursing, she got to her feet.
What had Ansel done?
The moon illuminated enough of the desert for her to see that the assassin's fortress was nowhere in sight, and that Casita's saddlebags were full of her belongings, except for her sword. She searched and searched, but it wasn't there. Selena reached for one of her 2 long daggers, but stiffened when she felt a scroll of paper tucked into her belt. Someone had also left a lantern beside her, and it took only a few moments for Selena to get it lit and nestled into the dune. Kneeling before the dim light, she unrolled the paper with shaking hands. It was in Ansel's handwriting, and wasn't long.
I'm sorry that had to end this way.
The master said it would be easier to let you go like this, rather than shame you by publicly asking you to leave early. Cassita is yours, as is the master's letter of approval, which is in the saddlebag. Go home. I will miss you.